Good morning. This is Robert Hertzberg for Network Computing Magazine. This morning, a morning where we have quite a bit of rain here, at least in New York where I'm sitting, we have as our guest Art Coviello, the chief executive of RSA Security, one of the original names in internet security software and still one of the leaders in the field. Art, thanks for joining us, and I hope the weather is a little nicer up there in the Boston area.
Well, good morning, Robert. It's only slightly better, but I'm ready to go with you.
If security technology were a living, breathing person, what stage of life would it be at? Has the technology advanced to a mature stage, or is it still in its adolescence?
I'd say late adolescence. I think the field is well established, and I think it's time for us to enter adulthood.
Some years ago, I was talking to a home security company about sort of battening down what was then my new house. Their salesman literally came to my house with a scrapbook of newspaper stories chronicling the robberies in my neighborhood. Does RSA have a scrapbook?
That's actually a pretty good analogy to really what we've been doing for the last year with our consumer-facing initiatives post our acquisitions of Toyota and Passmark. The fact is, the internet is a crime-ridden neighborhood, and just as you need community policing, just as you need good locks on your doors, just as you need good security systems, the same is true for your activities on the internet. So I think there's a real good analogy there. And in terms of a scrapbook, yeah, we could give you quite a number of cases on how fraud is perpetrated across the internet. And I don't think we have the hours to go into them, but if you want, I could give you a couple.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about one or two. What's your marquee one? What's the poster child for identity theft or internet fraud?
Well, unfortunately, it's not one isolated instance. This is something that happens all the time. As a matter of fact, this is actually an ecosystem for fraud that takes place. You have the guys that actually design the methodologies for gathering the information, the attacks, if you will, the forms of malware, the insidious software that gets on your computer and holds information and sends it back to somebody. Those guys pass it off to a group that are called the data collectors, who actually take the technology and the malware and get it sent out, gather the data, and then they pass it on to the criminal elements who, once they have the passwords or related information that's required to perpetrate the attack, actually go ahead and do it. They'll occasionally, these criminal elements, be accompanied by folks known as mules, who are sometimes duped into receiving cash proceeds, if that's the crime that's being perpetrated, and passing them on under the guise of doing some type of a service. Sometimes these people are actually not even criminals. They're just duped into doing this and laundering the money for the criminals. And this is occurring time and time again. I think one of the more depressing facts, though, is an even more insidious attack that we've identified in the last several months that is called a hijack Trojan, that literally will follow a user in who's established their identity and a legitimate session. When the user goes about doing their transactions as they ordinarily will, everything is done normally. But at the very end, this hijack Trojan enables itself and actually does one more transaction, which might be to transfer money to a criminal's account. And as a result, and I use that metaphor up front about being in a crime-ridden neighborhood and needing defense in depth, you know, not only do you have to be able to identify yourself, but you also have to have a system that will detect when somebody's doing something. So it's a combination of fraud monitoring, it's a combination of identity protection, and it's the ability to attack the criminals that are loitering around your neighborhood. And we actually have products and technologies that do all those things.
What about having people on staff who are so experienced in this stuff that they can recognize and that they can ferret out the bad guys themselves? I'm thinking of the fact that in World War II, the U.S. tapped the mob boss, Lucky Luciano, to help it sort of combat the Nazis. Do you have your own versions of Lucky Luciano running around, former malicious hackers helping you outsmart these bad guys?
We don't tend to deploy those types of folks. Because of the volumes of transactions engaged, it's hard to pick these guys off one at a time. So we have pretty sophisticated pattern recognition software that does do that, and it's designed by our engineers. So it's not one-off guys doing this. But once these patterns have been established, then yes, we do have people that follow up. We We have the ability now with our anti-phishing service to go to ISPs all over the world. We have a language translation service in New York City that's 7x24 that will enable us to talk to ISPs in South Korea if that's where an attack is emanating, China, Nigeria, elements of the former East Bloc and Soviet Union where a lot of these attacks emanate. And we're able to go to the ISPs in those countries, tell them the IP addresses that these attacks are emanating from, and get them to shut them down. They know us now, and they tend to cooperate fully. So what sometimes takes banks a week to 10 days to discover and to shut down, we can do in as little as 4 or 5 hours with our pattern recognition software and with some pretty vigorous follow-up from our anti-fraud folks.
You were talking a few minutes ago about RSA's consumer products, yet you don't actually sell anything directly to people in their homes who are, for instance, surfing the web, buying something at eBay. Do you see yourself having a direct-to-consumer offering at some point, as Symantec, for instance, has with Norton?
It's conceivable, but the fact of the matter is, if you're selling antivirus software, and don't get me wrong, I think everyone should have antivirus software. If you're selling antivirus software, you're going to get a significant percentage of consumers. But you're also going to get a significant percentage of consumers who don't have that kind of software, who don't have anti-spyware software. So you're right indeed. We don't sell direct to consumers. We sell to consumer-facing organizations. So let's say you're a bank and you have 5 or 6 or 10 million online banking customers. How sure can you be that all of those customers have up-to-date operating systems, up-to-date personal firewalls, up-to-date antivirus, up-to-date anti-spyware? The odds are pretty minuscule, right? So what the financial institutions are saying to themselves is, you know, we can't rely on the consumer. We've tried to build awareness over the years. It's had some effect, but it's never going to be good enough to get a large enough percentage of the masses to diminish the risk. So the banks are now saying to themselves, they have to start to provide that kind of protection for their customers and, quite frankly, for themselves. So our products are designed really to help the banks help the consumers stop the fraud, stop the identity theft, and stop the fraud itself.
Banks and finance companies are leaders in deploying security technology, have been aware for some time about the limits of single factor authentication, by which I mean relying on IDs and passwords alone. What should they and other companies be thinking about as the next big step?
Well, there's a consortium of federal regulators, and this has been, you know, well established in the press, called the FFIEC, who came out with a pronouncement late last year strongly recommending that all financial institutions have some form of multi-factor authentication by the end of 06. So we've seen a tremendous amount of activity from the financial institutions to comply with this recommendation. And what I'm proud to say is that RSA is within probably 1 month, we'll have the three largest internet banks in the country using a different type of authentication technology. One uses the technology we acquired from Passmark. That's a combination of device authentication and watermarking. They present pictures that you have to recognize. Another one of these financial institutions is going to be using the risk-based authentication in the form of a service, the technology that we acquired in the Scioto acquisition. And the third that we hope to be signing imminently will be using our traditional one-time passcode technology, the famous Secure ID token. But they're going to use it not only in the hard form for a certain percentage of their customers, but we've also come out with a toolbar version of Secure ID that is very easily downloadable to our customers, and they'll be able to use that. So the fact is that not one particular technology is going to suit each and every bank. The fact is that, quite frankly, authentication technology needs to adapt to facts and circumstances. So some financial institutions have massive transactions that are high volume but perhaps low value. And maybe a good enough or easy to implement solution is the right thing there, the right level of protection. But, you know, if you're wire transferring $1 million or $100,000 or a significant amount of cash, then you want to be absolutely positive that you've identified somebody on the other end of that transaction. And then a physical, very visible authentication mechanism like a token is very appropriate in those circumstances.
Since 2002, California has had a law requiring companies and government agencies to notify customers whose private information has been compromised. Will laws like this force companies to boost information protection, or do you think companies will find a way to circumvent them?
Notwithstanding what you read in the press, I don't think companies are in the habit of breaking laws. I think companies are in the habit of complying with laws. I do think that there should be a federally preemptive bill around breach notification, which is what we're talking about here. There are several before Congress that we've advocating the passing of. And the reason is this. There are already close to 30 states now that have passed their own bills. So can you picture companies trying to comply with 30 different bills and making sure they've complied with each and every one of these? And whoever has the most stringent bill is, in essence, legislating for the entire country anyway. So it's something that we think should be done at the federal level. We think it's good legislation. We think they ought to be careful that they don't trigger a breach for every little thing that might occur, because people get anesthetized if they just see this constantly and they don't tend to act. But people do need to be protected and notified. And I think the California legislation was a good start. I think the federal legislation is going to do better, and then we'll have one standard for the country.
You've agreed to be acquired by EMC, a company that's more than 25 times RSA's size and that has its roots in storage management, certainly more than security per se. Is there a risk of getting lost next to a parent that's so big and so foreign?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. You know, when we talked at the outset of this interview about where security was in terms of its life cycle, I said we were about to move into adulthood. I think for too long, security has been bolted on. You know, we've been attached to the entire information infrastructure. And I think EMC has made a bold move here to make sure that security technology is built in. We will be run as a separate security division within EMC with a charter to build a security franchise over $1 billion. So that was right in line with the goal we had as an independent company. RSA has tended to look at security from the outside in. By virtue of the fact that EMC has started in storage, they've tended to look at security from the inside out. So there's an opportunity, really, to build security in both directions so that we follow the information, which is the critical component. Much security over the years has been entirely defensive, and that does not reflect the fluid nature of the way applications are being developed with service-oriented architectures today. So we need to have security at every stage of the flow of information. I think EMC has shown a degree of boldness and, quite frankly, foresight to acquire RSA, because it will be our charter not only to build an independent security franchise with significant revenue, but also to ensure that security is built into each and every one of EMC's products. So it's not bolted on, it's systemic, and it's in there. And I think over time, once the transaction is completed, you'll hear a lot more from us. As you know, and as is required, we continue to operate as an independent company until our shareholders approve it. But obviously, strategically, we see the wisdom of the move, and we think it makes sense.
Well, since you're talking about growth and that goal that you have as an independent company and will maintain as part of EMC, let me ask you a question about growth. RSA's revenue barely increased at all in 2005, although you are back to about 20% growth so far this year. Where are the opportunities for a company like yours that already counts 90 of the Fortune 100 as its customers?
That's a great question, and one my board was asking me quite a bit over the course of last year. I was very frustrated last year that we were flat from a revenue perspective, because it was clear that identity protection and encryption because of these data warehouse breaches should have been top of mind and, quite frankly, top of wallet for companies. And we just could not seem to get the market unstuck. And I think what happens sometimes is people are paralyzed with just the degree to which the crisis was building around identity theft and with these data warehouse breaches, and trying to figure out how they would solve the problem. In the meantime, we didn't rest. We didn't believe we were losing market share. We weren't losing market share, but we realized that we would have to extend our authentication franchise much beyond the Secure ID token, which explains the acquisition of Scioto and Passmark. It also explains the initiative that we internally call Credentials Everywhere to get our OTP, our one-time passcode technology, into things like cell phones, memory sticks, PDAs, and the like, so it's easier to deploy. And quite frankly, starting in Q4, the fruits of our efforts paid off. So I appreciate your acknowledging the fact that we're now growing at a 20% rate. But that actually belies the significant growth that we're actually achieving, because our order rate is growing at over 30% so far this year. We've got a different revenue recognition methodology for our consumer-facing business, which is a subscription model, and it takes a little bit longer for those orders to find its way into revenue. So our growth rate as a company now is actually up over 30%. So in terms of consumer-facing business, I see tremendous growth there. It's a total greenfield. Less than 1% of consumers are protected online today, and there's over 600 million people that access the Internet day in and day out. In terms of our enterprise business, we've seen a tremendous resurgence there as well. We had over 900 new accounts this past quarter, an all-time record. But again, to give you some perspective there, there's roughly 240,000 businesses that have deployed virtual private networks, right? There's only about 25,000 businesses, maybe 30,000 businesses that have deployed some method of strong authentication. So of course, you know, the Fortune 500 have largely deployed, but we got 900 new customers last quarter because small to medium-sized businesses are increasingly becoming aware that they need this protection as well. So there's a tremendous opportunity in our core business. And finally, in our developer solutions group, the problem has been for people that wanted to encrypt data, that you could always encrypt it. The problem was decrypting it, having keys that would be protected, and having access control for those keys and keys that could be managed. And in the last year, we've done a fabulous job developing a key management system. So not only do we have encryption technology, but now we have the ability to manage those keys in an effective way. And of course, we're able to leverage our web access management product, RSA Access Manager, which also has an authorization engine built in. So we're leveraging that authorization engine with our key management, so only authorized people are able to get at the keys. This will go a long way with solving those data warehouse breaches. So whether it's key management and authorization, whether it's our traditional business of authentication for the enterprise, or this new consumer-facing opportunity, now we've got a market that is a fantastic one and promises growth for years to come.
You've personally served on committees related to cybersecurity, both regionally and nationally. With the fifth anniversary of September 11th approaching, I'm curious about how big a role there is for commercial technology companies in fighting terrorism.
You know, I've never been a believer that terrorists wanted to mount this massive attack to bring down the Internet. First, it's a bit of folly. The Internet is incredibly resilient. Second, terrorists like to kill people. And they like physical attacks. They don't like things like logical attacks on computer systems. Having said that, whether it's terrorists or criminals, so much now of our economy and businesses and flow of information run on the Internet that it is only prudent to see that this infrastructure is protected. And the only terrorist threat that I would see is a combined physical and logical attack that might somehow affect our ability to respond to an attack. But I think even that, while it's theoretically possible, is not likely. Having said that, the criminal element piece is more than enough to worry about and more than enough reason for us to have protection of our critical infrastructure. So I think commercial companies like RSA and, quite frankly, technology vendors themselves have an obligation to build security in so that we are protecting this infrastructure. And quite frankly, I think that's what EMC sees and has heard relentlessly from their customers, that security needs to be built in and not bolted on. So technology vendors as well as security vendors have a large obligation to do this. And, you know, I think that's a big part of why we're in business.
Thank you, Art. This has been Robert Hertzberg for Network Computing, talking with Art Coviello, the Chief Executive Officer of RSA Security. Art, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.